It's the morning show at East Coast FM, and we see her every year, and hopefully this year there will be a breakthrough of some sort. Berna Fiden, hello to you, Berna. Thanks for coming in.
Hello.
Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you as well, Dick.
And, you know, you come in every year. I don't know how many years you've come in. I know it's 12 years since your sister disappeared. I don't know how many years you've been coming in with us to follow up a possible piece of evidence. But you're welcome every year. And even though we hear your story every year, I think it's important that we hear it every year in order to hopefully trigger the memory perhaps of someone because of a particular incident that happened in Bray on the morning that she disappeared. So just to go back and tell us about and what you know about where she was living in Clondalkin and how possibly she came to Bray.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, our nightmare started when we got the news that Esra hadn't come home. And today marks the anniversary. So we are actually here on the anniversary today, 23rd. Mm-hmm. And it was 2011. She'd literally just popped out to go to the local shops while her husband was getting ready for work. And he was keeping an eye on the baby. And because he was going to take the car for the rest of the day, she wanted to just do a bit of shopping before. And so she didn't have to go out again with the baby later on in the day, because it's cold. February is always cold, you know. And unfortunately, that was the last time she was seen. And, you know, it just, it's not in my sister's nature to ever leave the house and never come back. And especially if leaving the house and she's going to be out for the day. She'd even phone me in London to say, you know what, if you're going to try and contact me today, I may not be in because I'm going to be at such and such, so don't worry if I don't answer my phone. Yeah. So she was always telling us where she was, when she was going to be there, so we wouldn't worry about her if we tried to contact her. So it's so out of character for her to just disappear. The first sighting, well, the first reading of a vehicle was at the Power City roundabout, and that was about just before 8 o'clock in the morning. But she left home at 7:20. Now, from her house to this Power City roundabout, it's a 4-minute journey. No more than that. You can Google map it. It just takes 4 minutes.
And that roundabout, it's probably got a different configuration or name now, but it's up.
It's still Power City. I mean, the Power City station is still there. I mean, you know.
Right, yeah, good. It's still just there. To establish that,
And, you know, and it's just, as I said, it's a 4-minute drive. Her registration was clocked up at just before 8 o'clock. So what happened in the time that she left her home for her car to reach that point has always been one of our questions. You know, did she stop to help somebody? Did someone else get in her car? We just don't know the answers to this because there is no actual image of her in that vehicle at any of the CCTV points. And the only other image we have is when a car comes into Bray. So along the Strand, she has a near collision with a Skoda Octavia. We've begged them to come forward to say, you know, if you've had a near collision with a car, you would have looked to see who was driving that car. Just come forward and tell us, you know, who, describe to us who was in that car. Was it a man or was it a woman? You know, but unfortunately, we haven't been able to find that car either. Then her car entered the car park at the bottom of Brayshead where the Star Amusement is. And within 30 seconds, it left that car park, went back into the one-way system, came out of Convent Avenue, and then went back into the car park. And then it passed. I mean, back then, the Star Amusement and that car park was not as big. There was a lot of derelict buildings around there, along the side of the Star Amusement. And the CCTV from the Star only actually viewed its immediate front. So that you know, we viewed the car going past, and then it sort of parked in a blind spot. So we never actually saw who came out of that car. And the Garda CCTV that was actually watching the Strand, it's on a swing motion, so that also was not watching the car park at the time of her driving in, which was about 8:30 in the morning. So from the Power City roundabout to 8:30, that is around how long it would take to get from to and from that area. So that sort of time scale is correct, but the time scale from her house to the Power City isn't. And eventually the CCTV camera from the Gardaí did swing round to that car park, but it was around 10 o'clock in the morning. So by which time it's a packed car park with, you know, lots of people. Mm. And you know, we were shown a footage of a woman walking up the hill, and they said, oh, you know, she never came down. Well, technically, you don't need to come down. Anybody that walks up the hill knows that. There is a car park at the top of that hill where you could just walk across back onto the road or walk straight through to Greystones anyway. So, you know, not everybody goes up and comes down. But that particular image that they showed us, you could tell after watching it that she was waiting for her dog, because as soon as that little dog went past, she turned around and
right,
walked.
Right, so in your mind, that woman is ruled out.
That definitely ruled out. That's not my sister. And that was a couple of hours after her car drove into the car park anyway. So the time scale there doesn't match.
Yeah. So just to remind us of this Octavia Carr and the near collision, mm-hmm. just concentrate on that for the moment and tell us, go through it again.
So when her car came through the Strand, it went into the car park first. This is before the collision happened. And then it was when it left that the car park and it went back through the one-way system and it came out of Convent Avenue. Her car then had, because there was an oncoming car along the Strand at the time, so as her car's pulled out, it had a near collision with this, with this Octavia. And it was weird because I watched that footage over and over again, and it was such reckless driving because her car then pulled to the side, the Octavia went past, and her car pulled straight out as if it was going bumper to bumper with this car. Now, women don't drive like that normally anyway, and my sister was such a cautious driver. She was, I mean, as a woman, if I had a near collision and I've pulled to one side, I would stop there for a couple of minutes before pulling out again.
To recover because your thoughts,
You'd be shook up, wouldn't you? But no, this car didn't. It just literally pulled straight back up and then went forward, and then it passed the CCTV of the Gardaí anyway, because that it went straight into the car park again. And where the hotel is at the end, the car park that's being rebuilt at the moment, it was literally just two bays in, but there was no CCTV watching that corner at the time.
So never, you know, got the identity of the driver of the car whatsoever.
No.
And you'd imagine that would be somebody, I mean, it narrows it down, the make of the car, and then you'd imagine somebody who had such a, you know, an experience of that near miss, it would stick in their mind.
Of course. I mean, if I had a near, you know, collision with somebody, the first thing you do is you would look at the other person driving, you know, or stop, talk to them or something, you know. But you don't sort of just pull over and then pull straight back out again. It just doesn't make any sense anyway, you know. That's like asking for trouble.
What was found in the car?
When they did forensics in the car, they actually found my sister's purse in the boot of a car. Now, I'm talking about a purse no bigger than a small cigarette box, which had her, you know, some folded money in it, her driving license and her bank cards. Now, there's never been any movement on her bank account using that card at all. So other than the clothes on her back, there is no ID on my sister, because her passports are at home, the driving license was in the purse, the bank card was in the purse, and as well as the money. Mm. Now this, and it's always baffled me, like, why would you put a purse in the boot of a car? This is not a big handbag that you're going to take a walk and you're going to think, oh, I don't want to carry the handbag. It's literally something you can just slip in your pocket. Yeah. It is so small.
That seems strange. Her phone?
Her phone was never found. It did ping. They told us the last ping was at Greystones. But then again, I've always said, well, it's a mobile phone. Anyone could have that mobile phone in their hand. You know, it is a mobile phone. So it doesn't necessarily have to be on my sister.
Activity on the phone, like, 12 years ago, Facebook would have been
I mean, I had access to my sister's Facebook accounts anyway. She gave me the passwords just in case she lost them. So there is nothing on there untowards. I've been into her Facebook. We've been through her messages on there, even the private messages that you can go into. And there is literally nothing untowards. It's just people she regularly talks to. You know, there is nobody on there that we don't know of. And, you know, even with the Garda, we went through her phone listings and everybody she'd phoned, you know, the few days prior to going missing, it was all known people. You know, it was friends that we knew, family. I mean, she called me just on the Sunday before she went missing. She called her friend Dilek on the Monday to say, you know, happy birthday to her son. And, you know, I've had people say, even the Garda had said at the time, like, oh, maybe she's committed suicide. Well, I ruled that out completely because this was a person that was making plans. She'd planned for my mum to come over here. She'd booked tickets. She'd invited her mother-in-law. She even phoned me, giving me a shopping list of things to make sure mum was going to take over with her. So, and she said, you know, I'm gonna treat the ladies. We're gonna have a ladies' day. I'm gonna surprise them. I'm booking, you know, I've booked a spa and I've booked a posh restaurant because it's her birthday on the 1st of March. And, you know, she was so looking forward to celebrating her birthday because she said, you know, I haven't had a birthday with mum for a few years and it's going to be really lovely to do that.
Yeah. I know from over the years, and you're telling us the story, there's this mystery of some time later and some keys had it in at a chip shop. And where does that fit into the story? Or do you know, or is it just another mystery attached to the story?
It is literally another mystery because I was backwards and forwards so much at the very beginning. I mean, I stayed here literally the first 3 months and I flew back a couple of times just for a weekend back home to see my own children, you know, pick up my own medication and things. And then in June 2011, I went back home and my mother was very distraught anyway. She didn't like me being here because she was scared for me. She'd already lost a daughter, so she didn't want me to go, you know. She said, just stay home for a bit, you know. So we went back on the anniversary. So we came back for the week, like we are here this week. And we were putting up posters around Neilstown. And my daughter was with me that day also. She went into the McCarthy's, sort of, it's a news agent's and a chip shop together, to renew the poster. And the gentleman who was running the place at the time came running out after her to say, and we were just standing by the car, just having a cup of coffee, putting all the posters back. And he just said, I have your sister's keys. And I was shaking. I said, what do you mean you have my sister's keys? Well, they were found in the shop, he said. And my first reaction was like, why didn't you take it to the Garda? And he said, well, I was waiting for you to come back because I was in and out of that shop all the time for the period of time I was actually in. And he knew that I would come back anyway. And I said, when were they found? He said, they were found before Christmas 2011. And because we'd gone back, it was February 2012 when we were there. And so he said it was before Christmas. I was cleaning the shop. He goes, I just found a set of keys on the counter and I didn't look at them at first. I just hung them up. And then it was like a month or so later when somebody in the shop said, you know, what are these keys? Do you know who these keys belong to? Then he's looked at the photo and it's got a photo of my sister and her son on one side and her husband and her son on the other side. And in that photo, my sister's got very long black hair holding her baby. So he knew my sister well enough to recognise that that was my sister because a lot of the posters we put up is with her hair, with highlights. And as women, we change our hair. But he knew her well enough to know that they were of the same, you know, they were the same woman. We did take it to the Garda. They questioned, you know, they went straight over there. They asked a few questions. But unfortunately, the CCTVs were wiped over. So we never knew who
Long distance, yeah.
No. And how they appeared there, we have no idea.
It's 12 years. I mean, you know, you're battling. Do you feel the longer it goes on, it's you won't get the answers you're looking for? Or do you ever give up sometimes?
No. No, I don't. The thought of giving up doesn't even enter my mind. But I always feel that, you know what, one day I'm going to find that answer. God willing, I'm still here.
Well, not give up, lose heart.
We're losing heart in the sense that it's going on for so long. But I think eventually something will come of it, you know. Somebody must know something, and I can't believe, and I've said this a million times, somebody just disappears and nobody's seen anything or heard anything. Someone is holding a secret. That's, you know, it's a belief. I mean, at the end of the day, how can anyone just disappear? You know, they've said, you know, she could have committed suicide, she might be dead somewhere. And I said, but she's, you know, you can't bury yourself. Your body would be found.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, at the end of the day. The horrible thoughts come into our minds that she's kept somewhere, that, you know, she's locked up. I mean, unfortunately, over the years, I've had emails to say, you know, she's been sold on the dark web. And it was just a way of extortion money, you know, to see if we would give any money for information. And all I kept on saying is, if you have information, you have to go to the Garda with this. So it's a torture for us when things like this happen. It's, you know, it's not fair that we're, you know, as families, we're targeted. I'm sure I'm not the only family that's targeted like this. But it doesn't help us any. But I'm not losing hope, and I'm never going to give up, because one day someone, I'm hoping, will come forward.
Yes.
And that's all we want. We want someone to come forward, even with the smallest information, because it may lead the investigation somewhere else.
Well, you're always welcome back here, Bernard.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And, you know, I've been coming here for the past 12 years, and you've also been so kind and welcoming. And I'm hoping that somebody today is listening that hasn't listened before, and they think, you know what, I know this woman, and come forward.
And if anybody has any information, obviously the Garda Síochána, but if you feel that you find it easier to get in touch here, please do. It's 087 77 11 103. 087 77 11 103. And, you know, we'll just hope that some of you won't have cause to come over, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been on Crime Call, I think, several times.
Several times, with us.
And Channel 4, was it?
Channel 4 came down.
Yeah.
And this time we're doing another production that's going to, a programme, well, an appeal programme, really, a documentary with and that'll be aired on TG4 later on in the year. And hopefully that will reach a different audience that hasn't seen or heard about my sister. So the more publicity out there about her, the better, because, you know, somebody
knows something. Berna Fiden, Ezra's sister, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's the morning show at East Coast FM. Our number is 087 77 11 103. And if you've got any information, please do pass it on to us, or indeed to the Gardaí.